Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
I'm Lisa Held, a food journalist and podcast host, presenting Behind the Label with American Humane. Produced by Heritage Radio Network for Springer Mountain Farms, this podcast series dives into what the American Humane Certified Label really means. Subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts.
This week on Meat and Three, we bring you stories about how Gen Z is different from their millennial predecessors through the lens of food.
My knowledge of alcohol didn't really come from like Bud Light commercials or like Project X.
Yeah, and that's my gripe with the platform as well, is that all these DIY videos, cooking videos, they're 20 seconds.
What's one food item from your childhood that you wish you could have today?
Dunkaroos, because they don't exist anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Although, the Dunkaroos Twitter was activated again a year ago, so it's only a matter of time. They've tweeted a couple times, it's pretty hype.
Listen to Meat and Three, HRN's food news and storytelling roundup, wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello and welcome to Cooking Issues. This is Dave Arnold, your host of Cooking Issues, coming to you live from the Lower East Side of Manhattan on the Heritage Radio Network. Joined as usual with Nastasia the Hammer Lopez from Stamford, Connecticut. How you doing?
Good.
We got John, although John is doing the radio program and doing all of your Booker and Dax customer service related work from Darien right now, Darien, Connecticut, home of the first rest stop on I-95 in Connecticut. How you doing?
I'm doing well, thank you.
So what is there in Darien other than
there's a good fish shop? There's a good fish shop I told him about, yeah.
Yeah.
Like they have like local fish, like you can get stripers and blues and whatnot?
Yeah, it's really good.
But is it as good as the stripers and blues that you would get just off of your porch?
Solo, with no one here, just by myself? No.
You know, you got to get in. Like I said, you got to get in. Like my stepfather, like, is the only person who is actually happier during the COVID time because he still relishes his lack of interaction.
Yes, and all but he has a wife, so he can choose to not be alone.
And I'm not trolling you in the way that other people we should remain nameless. What I'm saying is that he would prefer always to fish alone. So fishing alone is something that
I can't kill them. I have a hard time killing them.
You mean, yeah. For those of you that don't know, and I would say, Matt, how you doing? We got Matt in his Brooklyn booth right now, or Rhode Island booth?
He's not going back to Rhode Island.
No, I am going back to Rhode Island.
Oh,
I am, in fact,
now who
in
knows?
The midst of packing, because it's for real this time.
Mm. You're packing for how long are you going?
Until my lease in Rhode Island is up in May.
Nice.
Yeah.
Rhode Island and the Providence plantations.
Yeah, although she signed a decree or whatever taking that part off.
Who, the governor of Rhode Island
said
that it's no longer Providence plantation? Oh, because of the word plantation.
Indeed.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. See, I don't keep track of the news from the smallest state, the ocean state.
Well, the new question is, what's the new, like, who else has a secret long but slightly shorter than that state name? Because somebody probably took the mantle now for longest.
Well, what Rhode Island needs to do is just add some other bullcrap to their name so that they maintain smallest state, longest name.
That's, as a citizen activist, when I move there, I will petition for something.
You're like, the only reason I moved here was because it was the smallest state with the biggest
name.
And I like the Coen brothers a lot, and that's the only reason I'm here. They live in New York and L.A. now, and you don't even have the longest name. I'm out. You don't even have the corrupt mayor of Providence anymore. I don't even know if he still makes his pasta sauce like he used to. I mean, what's the dang point? You know what I mean?
I have horrible news. He's no longer with us.
He died?
Yeah.
Recently?
Cianci? A couple years ago.
Oh. Do you know who died recently? Very sad. Is Wilford Brimley.
Who's that?
Who?
Diabetes.
I'm Wilford Brimley. I've got diabetes.
Oh, yes. Okay.
You might know him from such classic movies as Cocoon, or such things as looking like a bullfrog character in the real life and saying diabetes. Like, yeah, he's 80 something, so he I'm not going to say he went before his time. I'm just going to say it's always sad when somebody goes. And so now I have, the mayor of Providence and Wilford Brimley all in one Megillah. Later on in the show, Nastasia tells me that we will have Phil Bravo. Is that true or no?
Yeah.
What's the name of the guy from Saturday Night Live? The announcer?
Yeah, the one that died or the new one?
He's dead too?
Yeah.
God.
This is a rough day for Dave. Do you need to cancel the show? Should we give you a minute?
Wait, Dave, what's your favorite? What's the favorite name that you like when he says?
Will Forte! Like that. I love Will Forte.
Chef Joanna says Don Pardo.
Yes. Don Pardo?
Don Pardo,
yeah. Okay. But anyway, like, I always wish that Phil Bravo was on Saturday Night Live, not so that I could be close to Saturday Night Live the way Nastasia loves Saturday Night Live, but just so I could hear someone go, Phil Bravo! Because yes. It'd be great, wouldn't it? Doesn't it sound good? Yeah. He has a great name. Like, for those of you that don't know, Phil Bravo, friend of the show, sometimes punching bag. I mean, not as good as Peter Kim at being a show punching bag. Comes on once a year, Phil Bravo does, to do his Grinch thing. Comes on occasionally to read things. Has, the great sonorous voice. So should I wait to make fun of him until he's on? I feel bad making fun of him when he's not.
Plus, he just woke up, so he's not going to be punchy,
Listen. For those of you that he's not lazy, he lives in California. Well, I don't know. But he lives in California, so he's not just waking up New York time. Yeah. He's just waking up California time. And
I think he might be in Palm Springs right now, actually.
But that is Palm Springs, California.
I know, I'm just saying, yeah.
You're like, it's not really California, it's Palm Springs.
It's Palm Springs.
Yeah. Have you been to Palm Springs? Have you been on that tram?
No.
You've never been to Palm Springs?
Nope.
You grew up in L.A. You've never been to Palm Springs.
My parents were like, why we're not going there. Yeah.
I mean, like, you never passed by it?
Yeah,
like,
we passed by it.
On your way to Joshua Tree or anything? I mean,
we passed by it.
I literally passed by your parents' house on the way to Joshua Tree through Palm Springs.
You should have stopped by.
Yeah. So if you should go, they have, like, a really cool tram. Have none of you taken this tram?
No.
I don't even know about the tram.
So there's a state park at the top of the mountain where Palm Springs is. It's really kind of a nice state park. It's like cool, right? And cause it's on top of a mountain, and so it's not as piss hot as it is down there in Palm Springs proper. But you take this tram and it goes all the way up the mountain. But the cool thing about the tram is it rotates, so there's no bad seat in the tram as you go up this mountain. So, like, Dax and Jen were like, oh, this is awesome, this is amazing, rotating tram. And you're going around, and it's really cool, and you're going from this piss-hot place, because we were there in the dead of summer, up to where it's, like, really nice in the mountains. And I spent the entire time, like, at the very center of the rotating tram, like, with my head in, facing straight down so that I wouldn't have to see anything. I was the exact opposite because I'm deathly afraid of heights. Deathly afraid of heights. Anyway. I recommend you going next time you're in Covina, going to the Palm Springs tram. I took it once as a small child with my crazy, now-dead grandparents, another case of dead people. And that was when I learned that teddy bear Choya are not to be trifled with, right? They are the Wu-Tang Clan of, like, small cactuses. Like, you think as a small child, I can kick that Choya, which is spelled Chala. But you're like, I think I can kick that Choya. And that sucker, I was there because my grandmother was doing some sort of, like, Job's Daughters / Masonic, hoo-ha bullcrap in, like, the late 70s. And I was a tiny child with a butt part, I had a real butt part, super straight hair, long butt part, giant photo gray glasses, a little bit on the chubby side, like polyester blue blazer, like cut, a little bit boxy and a little bit long, and ill-fitting pants. Can you picture this, Nastasia?
Yeah, I can.
You've seen the pictures, right? Also, like pre-braces, so like my teeth, like they may have a gap now, but they were like Levalore blinds back in the day, and like a real, some real buck tooth action going on. I mean, I had it, as we say, going on. And so I had my finest dress loafers on to go to my grandparents' thing. This is right before the tram. And I was like, that's a stupid looking cactus. And I kicked the cholla, and those needles went through my shoe and embedded through my shoe, through my sock, into my foot. And I spent like the rest of that whole morning trying to figure out how to extract cholla needles from your.
Is that the one that grows outside of Jeff and Diane's? The little.
No, those are opuntias. Those are prickly pear cactuses.
Oh, right.
The cholla's are the ones that like look a little bit fuzzy and look like a bunch of little nodules. They look almost like a giant yeast cell sometimes, or they look kind of branched, but they have like little spiky balls.
Mm.
And like the we used to call this one the, I don't know what the real name is. There's teddy bear cholla. It sounds friendly, is not. There's what they call jumping cholla because like the rumor is that those balls will jump out and get you. That's how aggressive they are. If you get anywhere near them, the needles will like embed, stick in you, and then they'll roll onto you and like really take you down. But do not mess with cholla's, but do go to Palm Springs and go up in that tram. Not a cooking related thing though.
That tram sounds like a recipe for motion sickness.
Are you also afraid of heights, Matt?
No, I was when I was younger, but no.
The thing about trams and people who are afraid of heights is that if you close your eyes and just understand that you're petrified, do my classic of trying to pretend that you're dead so that you can kind of ignore like life and your fear and the sweat. Remember, yes. Fear sweat, people, smells so much worse than regular sweat. Like running around sweat is like almost like pleasant compared to fear sweat.
You know, I don't know if you guys has a lot of info on that. That's so fascinating. Is McGee's new book that hasn't come out yet? But sweat.
Oh, you read it too?
Well, when he and I went out, he told me about the sweat chapter, and it's freaking fascinating. It's
yeah, how different different ethnicities of yes. people have different mm-hmm. like sweats. Mm-hmm. He also sent me a paper on fear sweat, which maybe I can share with. I can share with you guys. I don't have it in my head enough to like recite the results verbatim now, but in terms of like, I mean, I guess it is semi-cooking related since all of us sweat our freaking chonies through when we're working in a real kitchen, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So sweat, and no one wants someone to sweat into their food, right?
Mm-hmm.
I had this discussion the other day, like, what are your thoughts on the whole, because there's whole, like, people sweating into the food as they're cooking. It's horrifying when you see it, right?
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, we could talk about it. But what were you saying about McGee's book? And so just bringing it up?
I don't have the information in my head as well as he could explain it either, but it's fascinating.
So since he has finished his book,
mm-hmm.
you think we should ask him to come on? You think people would enjoy having the McGee back on the air?
Yeah.
We can discuss, we can solely discuss sweat-related issues.
Yes.
It can be sweaty cooking issues.
It's perfect for an August episode, yeah.
So for those of you that don't know, McGee's new book, as Nastasia says, is about smells. But a lot of the interesting stuff in the book is how different smells relate. So how like sweat smells or sex smells can be similar to certain food smells, et cetera, et cetera. It's not actually a food book. It's literally a book about smells and all of the kind of attendant molecules. Like I could see, like a lot of people do science classes using on food and cooking. I could see someone doing like an organic chemistry class for non-chemistry or non-pre-med people,
you know,
using this.
And Ariel's book, when she was here, she showed me, she's doing flavor and smells and stuff. And she's watercoloring her own, all the photos in the book. Which is really
cool. Well, she hasn't shared that with me, Nanny. I would love to. We should have Ariel on too.
Yeah.
We should have them on separately though.
Yeah.
Like they shouldn't be like stealing each other's thunder, right? We got to have them on separately.
Yeah.
But
let's get to the first order to get it out of the way, Dave.
But before we do that, let me finish Fear of Heights. So I would like some advice from people. So for those of you that know, Nastasia is convinced, true or false, that if something were to happen in my family life such that, you know, like, I don't know, they left me or whatever, then I would become the Leatherman. I would become an itinerant, like, walker. I would just be walking around, eating scraps out of people's trash cans and, like,
but sleeping below. But the other thing is that you would take the same route, which would allow you to see Jen's family, me, you know, so you, it works perfectly.
My parents.
Exactly, yeah.
Because they're on that loop.
Yep.
It's between the Hudson River and the Connecticut River, between the Long Island Sound and as far north as, like, where Middletown, Connecticut is. So if you guys are familiar with our little section of the East Coast of the United States, that little loop is the Leatherman loop. And so, yeah, you know, like, but, okay, so every 5 to 10 years, I decide to start thinking I'm going to do this again, but I got to find out when I'm going to do it. I would like to do either the Appalachian Trail or the Pacific Crest Trail. What do you think?
I would do one of those with you.
But it's so long.
How
it's
long
two,
is it?
They're 2,000 miles apiece.
How many days?
Do everything in its entirety? It's like half a year for people to do that hike.
Yeah.
Well, the real question is, you don't have to do it all in one shot. You can do, like, chunks of it. But the real question is, like, you can, like, it's still considered what they say a through hike if you do it, like, if you do, like, you know, a third of the hike, take a break, a third of the hike, take a break. As long as you complete the whole trail in a year, they consider it a through hike. That's the thingamajig.
Well, but there's some pretty restrictive timing issues. You can't go up Mount Katahdin at the end too late in the season. It'll just be closed. I mean, like, you can't start. There's a limit to how early you start and how late you end.
Yeah, so the power move is to do the midway up and then do a southbound later. You know what I'm saying?
Wow, okay, I did not realize that.
Or to do a reverse. So the problem is that people start the Appalachian Trail. So the East Coast of the United States, there's a 2,000 and change mile trail that runs from Georgia to Maine. And it sounds puny because we don't have any mountains here, but in the East Coast compared to what they have over there in the Sierras, which is where the Pacific Crest Trail is. But what they make up for in not having heights, they have a massive amounts of elevation change. So, like, hiking the whole Appalachian Trail is like going up and down Mount Everest, like, some unbelievable number of times. It's crazy. There's a lot of elevation change, even though no particular mountain
is
that high.
You know what I learned? So I watched them at the beginning of quarantine. This is partially why I stopped eating meat. But there was this one documentary called, like, I don't remember, Life Changers or something, but it was all about vegetable plant-based diets, and the guy got on did the Appalachian Trail in record time, and he thinks it is because of his plant-based diet.
Or is it that, okay,
I know you would refute.
I mean, do you think that Brady is, like, one of the great quarterbacks because he doesn't eat tomatoes?
It's not about the tomatoes, Dave. It's about the plant. Oh, and Phil Bravo's on now, so let's not get into football because this is going to be a thing, and that we don't need that.
Yeah, we only fantasy have football? Yeah, we only have so much time.
Is Phil Bravo still the commish of fantasy football?
I don't know if fantasy football is still on. I guess it's the perfect sport for this type of pandemic.
It's a fantasy.
It's truly fantasy football. They're imagining all the
Phil,
games.
Phil, unmute your microphone. There you go.
I'm very unmuted. Fantasy
Phil.
Football started because it's not football season. It's baseball season, and yes, fantasy baseball has started.
What's this new? I hear from Don Lee, my partner at Existing Conditions, that there's some sort of new fantasy baseball thing online where you pick random teams and then random games are, like, theoretically played in some sort of alternative Lovecraft universe. Have you heard of this, Phil?
Alternative games? No, I mean, I think it's just fantasy baseball. I think they're doing, like, a daily thing these days, but that is just to scam people out of money.
I don't really understand what you're talking about. Do you do fantasy baseball? Are you also a commish of that? Are you the Bartlett Giamatti of fantasy baseball?
I am only Bartlett Giamatti, the commish, in only in football. In baseball, I am just a lowly team. Sorry, that wasn't great payoff there. But yeah, just
team owner. Yeah.
Team owner. Yes. I manage my players that aren't Marlins because all of the Marlins are infected with COVID.
Oh.
Like, for real?
Are you serious? You don't know? Man, you guys don't follow sports. So the Marlins.
I told you not to get on this stage.
Well, here we are. Go for it, Phil. But use your best Phil Bravo voice, please.
Yeah. Yes. All right. So the Marlins.
Give us like a Sports Center thing.
17 players who have been and players and coaches.
Wait, say 17 players again. That sounded real good.
17 players. But then it just happened with the Cardinals. Baseball is nonsense this year. They set this thing up terribly.
Okay.
I'm Lisa Held, a food journalist and podcast host, presenting Behind the Label with American Humane. Produced by Heritage Radio Network for Springer Mountain Farms, this podcast series dives into what the American Humane Certified Label really means. We're looking inside the farm certification process, beginning with the moment a farmer expresses interest in becoming American Humane Certified, all the way to a consumer seeing the seal on store shelves.
And American Humane is our country's first national humane organization, founded way back in 1877. Now we certify nearly 1 billion farm animals each and every year. Despite that growth, roughly 90% of U.S. farm animals are still raised without the benefit of independently verified science-based standards.
Subscribe to Behind the Label with American Humane wherever you listen to podcasts.
Nastasia and I believe that you, first of all, for those of you that don't know, Phil Bravo, one of the things that he has done, I don't know if you're still doing it, is teach small children how to play crappy instruments, right?
And quality instruments, but generally crappy ones.
Yeah, and as everyone knows, the crappiest instrument of all time is the recorder, right? Sounds bad on a good day, blow too hard, and it sounds like dying animals. It's a garbage instrument. Right or wrong?
I mean, it depends. I mean, like, you have a lot of wonderful people in Amsterdam listening right now who would disagree, and they love some Baroque music.
Okay.
Is there a most famous recordist? Like, who's the Yo-Yo Ma of the recorder?
I can't remember. Well, there's this girl whose name I can't remember that is, like, a recorder virtuoso. She's, like, 25 and just is insane. I can't remember her name. And then there's this guy.
But can she still only get one note out of that thing at a time? Does it still lack nice overtones?
It doesn't really have. I think there's overtones in there. I don't know. I didn't really prepare for this. I can try and get a PowerPoint deck ready for you.
Did AC/DC ever use a recorder? No.
I mean, if they didn't, they're missing out. Is the main thing.
They've used bagpipes.
They have used bagpipes.
Love a bagpipe.
But Phil, so, tell Dave what your new hobby is.
Yeah. Let me ask you this. Nastasia, if you are a professional recordist, a recorder teacher, what would be the only lateral instrument move you could make in terms of instrument quality? The only one.
We had said triangle, Dave.
Yeah, but then your friend Min Young said that the triangulist is actually respected in an orchestra. Why, I don't know.
Right. Yeah, Phil, do you know why?
Yeah, because they're a percussionist, and also everyone can hear what they do. You mess up, everybody hears you're a backstand violinist. Hey, you could fudge a few things.
All right, so Stas, what's the only lateral other than triangle?
Ukulele.
Oh! Ukulele!
Nastasia, I know what you're doing there. This is like literally the only skill that I worked on in quarantine.
I know. I told Dave, and then he was like, "Are you kidding me?" Yeah.
So is it because you have a deep voice and you want to cover Tiny Tim songs?
Well, it's it's so complicated. There's a lot of strings on that ukulele. There's only four. I'm not a smart man, Dave.
Here's the other thing, people. In case you don't know. Ukulele is one of is of the two open chord instruments I can think of, the lesser by far. It's no banjo. You know what I mean? Like, the banjo is an open chord instrument, so like I can pick it up and just slap at it like a monkey and it'll make a chord. But it, you know, at least it's a banjo and there's a whole technique of picking around it, you know? The ukulele, I mean, aren't you just holding your finger in a bar and going up and down the neck and strumming?
No, no, no. Dave, you're embarrassing yourself. Like you
okay. Have, like, I, you're playing ukulele and I'm embarrassing myself.
One of the first people that I ever met in the wild that actually listened to your show is and runs an orchestra program in Hawaii and is a bass player, and like you gotta respect Hawaiian ukulele. I will say the way that the ukulele is generally played, terrible. The ukulele itself, awesome. Me playing it, terrible.
I'm not saying, right, okay. That is a fair statement, right? Like the Tiny Tim style open chord strumming ukulele, if that's all banjo was, also the banjo would be a joke. But clearly the banjo is a great instrument because of what people do with it, right?
And because you're coming from Brooklyn, so you got to love a banjo, it's required. Banjo and a xylophone.
Xylophone?
Mm-hmm.
Now, what's the difference between a hammered dulcimer and a xylophone, Phil?
Hammer dulcimer is a string instrument. Xylophone is a metal bar. I mean, you hit it. Yeah, fair enough. I mean, like, but
who is the famous dulcimer player? Is that Yanni?
Did Yanni play dulcimer?
Is that who that was? Was that Yanni?
I don't think that Yanni would just be at the Acropolis, right? He just like sang loud, inspirational.
I thought he dulcied. I thought he was one of those dulcy dough people. Someone look up some Yanni live at the Acropolis. What?
I thought he just sang. No, he's a Greek keyboardist, composer, and producer. So keyboardist.
Keyboard.
I feel like okay. Like talking to you about music is like a Jack Handy thing. It's like everything is like some kind of half fuzzy version of reality.
What? Wait, who's Jack Handy?
You don't remember Jack Handy like, wrote for SNL
and thoughts.
And he also did Emery.
Yeah. Say Phil's voice with what's Don Pardo?
Phil Bravo.
Or anyway, Jeff Hammond now.
What? Nastassi and I believe that Phil Bravo needs to quit. First of all, Phil Bravo lives close enough to Los Angeles that he could actually do what we're about to say for a living. Not that you can't do this remotely anyway with a decent microphone. When are you going to quit teaching recorder and ukulele to small snot-nosed children and become like a voice professional?
Yeah.
Come on, give me some more Phil Bravo
voice. 7 years.
I know. I waited too long. Now everybody's just sitting at home, so they're getting there. All of the people that would have been acting are now just voice acting. They flooded the market, Dave.
Yeah, but you still have the voice.
It's true.
It's true.
You would never guess that you come from Florida with that voice.
You should see the jean shorts I'm wearing now.
Oh my goodness! Now I'm horrified. Now I can't even listen to you. Give me something to wash away the jean shorts.
Are you in Palm Springs, Phil?
I'm in Palm Springs right now. I'm on my one. This is how I'm spending my vacation, Dave. Talking to you.
Oh, joy. So listen, why don't you read what you came on to read? So Phil Bravo had an experience with one of our. Oh, before we get into this though, Wes Hendrickson, listener, went on the Twitter last week and rightly pointed this out. I just want to say for those of you out there, that the antigen tests for COVID, the antigen tests, which is the normal point of care kind of test that you can get, are not accurate enough, especially in the absence of contact tracing, to allow you to forego social distancing measures. So I just want to be clear that we're not saying that that kind of test is a valid test to have you stop social distancing. So I just want to not forget to say that before the show is out. Now, Phil, what do you got for me?
That was the transition to me.
Phil Bravo! Brand new transition. There you go.
Classic cooking issues intro.
Yeah.
All right, so I'm going to read an email that I received, and it was to my work email, so I apologize in advance if this isn't professional. So I'm going to names have been changed and altered to protect the innocent.
All I'm saying, Phil, is if you're going to do the voice acting, you got to speak into the mic. You're like waving in and out like you're like...
I even used my good quality phone microphone all for you, Dave. But
let me ask you a question, Phil, before you get into what you're saying. Do you think if, let's say three people are doing a radio show on the regular. Let's say it's called Mooking Bishews on the Raritage Radio Network, right? And two of those people buy their own microphones, but one of the people refuses to buy their own microphone for so long, and the sound quality is so bad that the network buys and sends them a nice microphone on the network's dime, and the other two people get nothing. What are your thoughts on this?
Well, I guess if the first two just weren't confident enough in their self-worth to demand the equipment that they rightfully deserve, you know, I guess that's on them, Dave.
Yeah, Bill.
But what if the third person didn't demand it? It's just the network got so pissed off at how bad that third person sounded that they sent her, let's say her name is Mustacia Glopez, they sent her a nice microphone. I'm just saying, I don't know.
I think that Nastasia is a very clever person, and she understood that eventually exactly. I would crack.
Exactly.
Yeah. Uh-huh. What I would say is it sounds like that third person knows the way the game is played.
Okay.
Take it away.
From that third person.
By the way, we have not had one cooking-related thing this entire time.
Yeah.
Oh, I can. I made a terrible horchata ice cream that we can talk about.
Oh, let's do it now. Let's do it now. Rice horchata or chufa nut?
Rice. So, okay. I thought I was being clever. Basically, I found some recipe where it wants you to steep the cream with. So basically, you don't actually blend in the rice, almonds, and cinnamon. You steep the milk. But I was like, nah, that's going to be just lightly flavored. No one wants that noise. I'm going to use my new Vitamix, and I am going to blend just the crap out of the rice and the cinnamon. And then I also didn't use Mexican cinnamon because I'm a heathen, so I just use regular stick cinnamon. And now I have I haven't made the ice cream yet. It's in the fridge. Just pudding, Dave. It is pudding. And it's because of the rice, I'm guessing.
It's a lot of starch you have in that, my friend.
I know.
Like, how much rice per unit liquid? That's a lots and lots of starch.
So basically, it's like we've got 2.5 cups of cream, 1.5 cup of milk. I usually do a two cream, one milk, but it was I was like, it was just thick. It was like a viscous, just kind of blobbish thing. But then it was basically a cup, a little bit less than a cup of rice and a cup.
A
of
real milk. Cup or a rice cooker cup?
A real cup.
Ooh, okay.
I was using. So what I did is I looked up a recipe for horchata, and like, but I think that even those recipes assume a blender that's not gonna like do its full like, you know, dirty sinful business. It's gonna like kind of like leave chunks that you can then sieve out. But no, my Vitamix did its job, and so I've just got like a wonderfully tasty, very heavily cinnamoned sludge.
Phil, now you know that the VitaPrep means business.
It does.
I think at this point, you should just heat it and turn it into a pudding. You should just cook the starch out and have it be a pudding.
I think you should get the real nuts and not use the rice.
Well, that's a whole different thing. You
would.
I like know, the chufa nuts, Stas?
What? Yeah.
You prefer the chufa nut to the rice?
I do. Yes.
I like the word chufa nut.
Yeah.
But what happens if I put it in the ice cream maker? Like, what's going to be wrong with it?
What kind of ice cream maker do you have?
It's probably a Hamilton Beach, I'm going to guess.
No.
It's wow.
The Black & Decker.
Wow.
It is a
Cuisinart. Kobe brand. It's a Kobe.
It is a lovely Cuisinart. It's my friend, so it might break it, but it's not mine.
It's going to be too thick. So, like, the issue on motorized things is that one of the ways a lot of these things work is they judge how well they've been freezing by the kind of viscosity, and when the motor stalls out, it knows it's done. And so that's why I'm asking. I don't know how that particular unit does, but you're going to stall out your dasher motor like much earlier because it's so thick. So it's just, if your viscosity is like really, really wrong, it's just hard to get anything but the most powerful ice cream, like commercial ice cream maker, to get it to work right. So you might want to, like I say, just heat this, turn it into a pudding, right? Like cook the starch out, right? Because you haven't cooked the starch out yet, right?
I have
so
not.
Now it's also chalky. It has the benefit of being chalky and pudding and sludge-like, right?
All
right,
so
I would heat.
Dude, you got to slow down for 1 second here, just because, like, again, I teach the recorder. Cook the starch out. Explain to me.
To heat it.
Yeah, but
like doing a double boiler, it's going to scorch like a mother.
How does the starch come out? Like, I this is, you got to speak to me like
you
I'm
got
a child.
Yeah, Dave, you got, how does the starch come out? Just by
right
heating
now,
it
you have
out?
A pile of raw rice.
I do.
Right. So if you heat it up close to the like boiling point of water, then you know the starch will swell, soften, and cook in the way that like a cornmeal slurry would. And then when it cools back down, it'll turn into a solid like a rock, but at least it'll be cooked.
Solid.
You know what I mean?
Solid as a rock.
Yeah, nothing's changing it. The thrill is still hot.
Solid as Barack.
That's a great song, by the way.
This mic is already paying dividends because I heard every bit of Nastassia.
You heard Nastassia also singing
yeah.
it?
You heard yeah. my background vocals?
Listen.
Yeah. Also, it was worth it.
Was that less
those
than
of you that only hear Nastassia and I arguing with each other on the air, and by the way, we also do that in the real life off, it's strange the things that we like in common.
But we also know, like, I knew you were going there. We've done it many times.
It's like a hive mind issue.
I don't know what
we
that is.
We have a hive mind?
I don't know what that is.
Yeah. All right. Okay, so any more cooking questions, Phil Bravo?
I think that made sense to me. I'm
send
on board
us a
there.
Photo when you're done.
But listen, Phil, welcome to the land of Vita Preps because Vita Mix, I guess. They don't even call them Vita Preps anymore, right?
No, nobody mm-hmm. calls it that.
Just me. I'm the last sole survivor of the Vita Prep. Mm-hmm. Back in the day, they used to make a model just for chefs. It was a Vita Mix, and they wrote Vita Prep on it. But I think they stopped doing that, like, I don't know, 10 years ago or something. But I don't change. Anyway, they're a pretty sick instrument, right? You love that thing.
I love that thing so much. I make many a flower out of random things, just like paper clips.
Are you trolling Nastassia?
No.
Are you trolling
Nastassia? He doesn't listen to the show.
Yeah, but I'm sure you've complained about it to him.
No,
and, like,
we don't talk about work.
All right. I like how I've just been relegated to work. But just so you know, Phil,
cooking
she does talk about you at work.
What was that?
She does talk about you at work, for sure.
I am clear on that. It is one of the reasons I don't listen to the show. I don't. I feel like there's a whole fiction version of me out in the world.
Flour is a trigger word for Nastassia. She doesn't like to think about it or talk about it.
No, it's only because, Phil, everybody's making bread at home, and people that make bread are usually in a couple, you know, so it's...
Pat's making bread. He's,
Pat's not making bread.
I think it's mainly because...
Pat stopped cooking.
Yeah,
Pat is another friend of Nastassia's, friend of the show, professional didgeridooist.
It's true.
He's a professional. First of all, he plays many, many instruments. What's the word for like a polyglot for instruments?
I think just polyglot for instruments, I guess.
All right. Anyway, he plays a whole lot of instruments professionally. But what Pat has a really cool job in that there's a couple of things that all of the famous orchestras only know him as the only guy that plays it. So, like, right or wrong, when an orchestra is like, I need a didgeridoo. They're like, I don't know. The only guy I know who plays it is this Pat guy. And so they fly him out to do his didgeridoo, and then he goes home. True or false? So,
I have not heard that.
It's a version of the truth. So there was one concert with the didgeridoo, but it's generally he does a lot of ocarina, but he plays the saxophone. But ocarina is the thing he had a bunch of gigs on.
Does he enjoy the melon ocarina, man?
I believe that he – I mean, how could you not, Dave?
Smash Mouth on the melon-based ocarina is one of the better YouTubes.
I don't know that.
No?
You've never seen All-Star played on ocarinas made from melons?
No. Mm-mm.
No. Oh, we've definitely talked about this on the show because I remember Googling it after. It's worth it.
I think Nastassia probably rightly tuned us out during this conversation, but this guy, I think he makes like ocarinas for people like Pat Posey, but also makes them out of things like melons so that he can play Smash Mouth's All-Star on the melon ocarinas. It's classic. But am I right or wrong in that Pat Posey was in fact paid cash money to play didgeridoo for an orchestra and thus is a professional classic didgeridooist.
I believe that is true. Yeah.
You see, although I don't present the complete truth, what I always say is the truth.
Yes. Also, yeah. I feel like we need to do, I have an ad in the making of just like, do you have a melon but need an ocarina?
Yeah, well, you know. You talk to this guy. I mean, this guy is like better than all of us at the YouTubes. He has like 8 billion views because unlike Nastasia and I, he knows what people want. They don't want to hear people talking about like cooking and their friend. They want someone to take a melon, what used to be a watermelon or a honeydew or a muskmelon, and all of a sudden now it plays Smash Mouth. That's what they want, clearly.
I didn't realize.
Do you have a theme song for the show, Dave? I never listened.
Yeah, it's someone redid Amos Milburn's Vicious Vicious Vodka, cocktail blues legend Amos Milburn redid one of his things, and that's our intro.
Well,
because Nastasia didn't like the kind of the screamy metal Joel Gargano cooking issues go intro.
Well, depending on Nastasia, you'll have to pressure Pat and I into putting together an ocarina and recorder.
I would love that. But you guys can't get your crap together fast enough for some of the things I request.
I don't know.
Well, we've been doing it for 10 years.
Sometime in the next 10 years would be good. Just try and work it out.
Now, listen, people, I want you to write into the chat room or to whatever, to Nastasia or to John. Like, here are the instruments you can choose from. You got your saxophone, your ocarina, your didgeridoo, your recorder, your ukulele. Any combination of that, the Phil Bravo / Pat Posey team can make, if they choose to, a theme song using those instruments. So, doesn't he have like a baritone sax? Isn't he like a hired gun on Barry?
Yeah, he does a lot of Barry.
That's a sick instrument. The baritone sax is freaking sick.
And then Phil, you should sing over it.
I'll think about that one.
Phil Bravo, you are the bass trombone of human beings.
I feel like I don't know if that's a compliment or the worst insult I've ever had.
Well, Nastasia and I were bonding this earlier this week over our shared love of Sly and the Family Stone.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And Sly and the Family Stone has some sweet, I believe, bass trombone parts. Wah, 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 wah. And that stuff's awesome, right? Doesn't he have bass trombone in some of those arrangements?
Now I'm going to have to go and listen. I don't know what that is played on. I believe you, but this is probably some fuzzy version of the truth.
Look, as long as my version of the truth contains a bass trombone, I'm happy with it.
All right, I will get back to you. I'm going to do some research.
All right, you do that. Meanwhile, why don't you do what you came on to do, Phil?
All right, and so we have an email entitled Odd Question. Hello, Phil. I'm not sure if you remember meeting me at the Sistema USA conference in Detroit last year, where we presented on Sistema Toronto's social curriculum, which, as an aside, Dave, was really impressive.
What the heck is Sistema?
So that's what I actually do. So we'll do the short version. It is a approach to teaching music for young people that basically blends music education with social justice, with the idea that everyone should have access to high quality music education.
That sounds great.
It's great. Yeah, that's it's done, Dave, through recorders.
You lost me.
But a little bit. This is also.
I thought you said high quality.
We had a nice lunch afterward, if I remember correctly. It was.
No, I'm at the music.
He's you reading said the, music the email.
Oh, all right, right.
I'm reading the email, Dave.
All right.
This show.
I'm watching you right now, which wasn't creepy. I'm watching you right now on the YOLA webinar. I was hosting a webinar, Dave. And it reminded me where I recognized your name from. My apologies if I am totally wrong, but your voice also sounds familiar. Are you the same Phil Bravo that has appeared on the geeky food podcast, Cooking Issues? If so, this will be one of the most hilarious small world moments of my life. Cooking Issues is my absolute favorite. He's from Canada, so there's a U in there. Favorite podcast. And I've been listening to it every week for years. again, sorry to waste your time if there's a Phil Bravo voice-alike out there. And then that's
and there is not. There is only there one is Phil Bravo.
So,
you have reached
apologies. I didn't really get approval to read that online, but I figured that that would be okay.
Phil, can you give the little short thing of when you started at the LA Philharmonic and you needed an email address?
the short version is basically the IT department would never set up my email, and they kept on turning it off because they kept on thinking that Phil Bravo was a fake name. That, like, in the system, it's like a catch-all. They're like, someone just put that in there.
That's not real.
Phil Bravo, so good.
I mean, it's a great name, and you have a great voice, and you're throwing it away.
It's true.
You're throwing it away.
All of my potential.
You're 40 years old, Phil. Get it together.
I know. Just withering on the vine, Nastasia.
Get it together, Phil.
I will say, though,
see what's happening. Listen. So I'm going to give you some more advice so that we have some cooking in here.
Oh, perfect.
On your Vita prep, things that people don't necessarily know about it. It's actually better for the equipment to run it on full high speed. So when you turn it on, always remember, when you're turning it off, make sure both switches, if you have the classic style, are down. The variable speed and variable speed, and the off switch off, make sure the knob is turned all the way to slow. So just make it a habit when you're done of just swiping down on the face of the unit with two fingers to put both paddles down, and make sure that knob is all the way to the left, counterclockwise. And making that a habit that you ingrain in the way that you use the Vitamix is going to save you someday from the very least that will happen is you will be shocked when you accidentally turn the switch on and it ejects an entire pitcher of like very stainy crap all over your kitchen.
Hypothetical.
And the flip side of that is someday you will pour hot soup into this and hit go. And if it does it with hot soup, it can be a very, very, very nasty, nasty burn. So just make sure that before you turn it on, that you do that both down, turn the knob to the left. And when you turn it off, just make it a habit of always doing that. So that the odds are, even when you're working, that you're never going to be in a situation where you flick it on when it's on high. Also, everyone like does this, but if you when you rattle the pitcher as it's going, you're messing with the bearing on the bottom of the thing, and that's what's going to cause over time your pitcher to get leaky, which will happen over time. The bearings now are much better than they were 8 or 9 years ago, but it's still not considered good practice. That said, like when I get mad at it and I don't want to bother plunging, I will sit there and smash the top of it like a bongo drum to get it to do what I want. Another thing with the Vitamix is remember not to dishwash your pitcher. And the reason, again, is the bearings. It's not good. There is no ball bearing, even though they're sealed, that are designed to be continuously and constantly dishwashed. And also, it will fuzz out the plastic on the outside over time. So your best bet is right after you're done blending, hot water, start it on low, blend it up, and then dump it out. That should clean the blades out, and the rest you can clean by hand. Am I missing anything, John, on Vitamix care?
I like to include a little soap in that final blend. Just does it all.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But don't dishwash it. And by the way, that also goes for Spinzols. You're allowed to, and we say in the manual that you're allowed to dishwash the lid, but just be aware that it will shorten the life of the ball bearing. So John was telling me, we're talking this morning before the radio program, we don't know why Searsols are not in stock in Amazon. We've sent them two orders and they just haven't put them online. True or false, does?
Yeah, that's true.
And do you know any reason why they are shafting us?
I have no idea. No idea.
It's not us, people. Amazon has it. This morning, by the way, just so you know, we can talk because we have the patents. I'm working on some interesting Searsol related stuff. Maybe in a couple of weeks we can talk about it. But we have some interesting movement in the Searsol space. We don't know when we're going to have the next round of Spinzols for sale because the factory just won't get back to us. Like everything, like all over the world, obviously, is problems with Corona. But I actually don't think this is a Corona problem. Do you think it's a Corona problem, Nastasia?
I don't think so. I really don't know what the issue is.
we are trying to get a date for when we can get more Spinzols in. They just don't exist right now. So they don't exist.
But everyone should keep emailing spinzol@bookerandex.com or searsol@bookerandex.com, and I can put you guys on the wait list and then notify you as soon as they're available.
By the way, I'm not encouraging you to waste John's time, but John literally, like, John is like the best customer service representative, I think. Like, he's crazy. We have the best customer service of like any company because John is like so freaking conscientious about handling problems. So please, if you do have a problem, let us know. But we were actually, you know, whatever. Learning to troubleshoot people's problems over the phone is a fine art. I'm actually not bad at it. I'm bad at calling people back, but once you have me on the phone, I'm real good at it, right, Stas?
You're really good at it. You're better than the people that they send out to the house.
I know. It's not a skill that I really want to have, because what it means is that I've spent the majority of my life dealing with people that have things wrong. So I have to be...
Hold on. The weather is not good. I'll be right back.
Nastasia is turning into a... yeah, we're about to have a tropical storm hit us. So, Phil, thanks. Oh, let me hit one.
Oh, you did.
Nastasia, you're going to head out?
One question from the chat, too.
All right, and then I'm going to rip two real quick questions. What's your question from the chat?
John Sikor wrote in. He's asking if you have any tips on juicing a pineapple in the Champion. He has trouble with the restrictor plate getting clogged.
Yeah, well, it just gets clogged after a while. So what we're talking about is the Champion juicer has an auger and then little teeth, and then it scrapes it as you push it through. The teeth scrape it and masticate it, but chew it up, like masticate, gross word. I'm sure Nastasia hates it. I don't know if she's still
I'm
on
back.
But I'm sure you hate the word masticate, right?
It's not that bad.
Really? All right. So chews it up and then pushes it through a plate with tiny holes, and then the fiber doesn't make it through the holes and they go out. But things with shreddy fiber, like things like ginger, like celery, whatnot, really tend to clog it up. So when you're juicing something like celery or rhubarb, the trick is to cut them in short pieces so that the long threads don't clog it. But with pineapple, I've never really had that much of a problem. I usually chunk it before I put it in. But yeah, that's all. I don't know. I've never had a problem with that clogging, but it is relatively quick to swap that plate out. So, in general, like as soon as it starts getting too hot, or clogs too much, I swap it and pull it in and out.
Dave, we should get going. This weather is getting really bad, and I'm a bit.
All right. Give me one second. Don't juice. I did a test to see how bad it was to juice apples without taking the little peel off of, you know, not the label off of the apple. Don't do that. They all get stuck on that plate, and then that becomes a nightmare. All right, so I have to do. Hold on. This is from the chat room, L. Burns. Hey, Dave, Cooking Issues crew, thanks for the show. I know how you feel about vegans, so apologies in advance. We love vegans, right, Stas?
I'm vegan, celibate, and sober.
Whoa.
Stas 2.0.
Yeah, Stas. That's
not,
Stas
not
like
by 8.0. Choice. Not by choice.
Well, you're vegan by choice.
Vegan by choice, true. Yeah.
Yeah. And, like, for those of you, like, maybe I'll look, if it means you can have a glass of wine, I'll do more Instagram lives with you, Nastasia.
Okay, that's good. All right.
I mean, if that's the reason we need to do it,
yeah,
then I'll do it.
Okay.
All right. So I know how you feel. Do you like to see that shirt that someone made with me as Leatherman?
Yes.
And you?
That shirt is classic. So good.
So good.
It's a great shirt.
Who am I? Yeah. I'm, what's his name's wife? Dulce? No, I can't remember.
Who?
The one of me is. What?
Nothing.
It looks like Scarlett Johansson, but is it?
No, it's some Russian dictator's wife. Like,
oh yeah, no, that's the young. Is that the young Stalin?
Yeah, maybe.
Is that Stalin's daughter?
No, I have to look it up. But go on.
All right, it's not Lenin's wife, is it?
I think it might be Lenin's wife. Yeah, let me see.
Huh. Well, she'll look that up. But if you were forced to try making the best possible vegan, quote-unquote, bacon ever, how would you go about doing that? I know conventional suggestions like smoked paprika, liquid smoke, but wondered if you had any other ideas. Thanks. So listen, L. Burns, I don't have any ideas off the top of my head. This is something that I would definitely put out to the put out to the chat, and also maybe we'll throw it on John. Maybe we could throw it on our Twitter feed to get people to respond, because we have plenty of people who worry about this stuff.
Yeah,
right?
I would say to maybe look at Jeremy and Rich's work. Jeremy Umansky and Rich Shee, Our Cook Quest, and at TM Gastronaut on Instagram. I know Jeremy's done some cool stuff with mushrooms in the past.
I mean, also, why don't we, John, why don't you reach out to them, and we can have them just call in on the next show if they have a good recipe and give us their answer for it.
Yeah, can do.
Another thing is that I am not a vegan, but you know what I do love, and I've said this before, and I'll say it again, Bako Bits. Texturized vegetable protein bacon bits are better than actual bacon bits on a salad. I'm going to go ahead and say that, because they are crunchy as all get out. Am I the only one that likes bacon bits?
Indifferent.
I haven't had one in a while.
Okay, listen. Bacon bits, don't think of them as fake bacon. Think of them as crunchy, salty smoke, right? So they're like crunchy, salty, smoky, proteiny, like umami crunchlets. They taste good on salad, even if you had real bacon. So for instance, if I had a Cobb salad and there was bacon on it, right, I would still be like, you know what would taste good? Bako bits on this son of a gun. Hell, I'll put salad. First of all, Nastassi, you still, if you were to have pizza, are you still salad on pizza? Please tell me you haven't lost that. I might have lost Nastassia, but Nastassia and I like salad on pizza. I'll put Bako on that sucker. Anyway. All right. Since Nastassia is gone, if I have 30 seconds left, I'm going to do this because Nastassia hates carbonation questions. Daniel Wallingworth wrote in, after a year and a half of binging the show, I'm almost caught up. Still got 40 episodes to go. My wife really likes, say the French word seltzer water with your fancy French accent, John.
Say that again?
Say the fancy French water name, the American seltzer water name. Say it with a French accent.
Perrier? La Croix?
No. Yeah, say it
again. Yeah, La Croix.
Yeah, there you go. You see, the thing is like I would say like La Croix, but it's just not the same because I can't do the C-R-O-I-X the way that a real Francophone can. You know what I mean? Can't be done.
Nastassia lost power. She's texting us.
Crap. Yeah, I told her before this thing happened that she needed to get her generator in order. I'm hoping she did. I'll call her in a minute and see how she's doing. I recently made a carbonation rig with a 20-pound tank and a carbonator cap. This produced cheaper, affordable results, which is why I went this route, but the flavor is a little lackluster. I'm using water from my fridge door, in which I regularly change the filter. Those fridge filters are garbage. What I recommend you do is get a house filter and filter the water through a big filter before it goes into your fridge, and then just throw the filter away in your fridge. I think in the long run, you're going to have a better result that way. But whatever. Do what you want. It's your filter. It's your water. It's your life. And I store it in the freezer for a couple hours before I carbonate it. How can I make the water taste more like that word? Should I add essential oils? They use water-based things, and they have systems that are made specifically to go into water by large flavor houses. Very hard to duplicate that stuff by yourself. Like if you can just, I just squeeze limes and lemons into my seltzer, which reduces their bubbles, but I drink it so quickly it doesn't matter, and it's extremely fresh. Another very good thing, if you don't mind slight amounts of alcohol, and I'm sure John, you like this, is bitters. You like bitters in your seltzer?
Not really. I don't like bitter flavors in general. Not a big bitter fan, right. Yeah.
Well, if you like bitters, celery bitters in seltzer are delicious. Just a couple of dashes of celery bitters in seltzer, great. Even Ango. Ango's a little overpowering for some people for a standard seltzer, but try a couple of dashes of celery bitters or anything like that and give it a shot. I'm using my fridge cave. How can I make it taste more like that or the mineral flavor of Topo Chico? Well, you can or San Pellegrino. You can just use mineral water. I haven't had a good fake mineral water, although you can read Fix the Pump, Darcy O'Neill's book on soda, or go to his blog wherein he has lots of recipes for fake mineral waters. And then also, how is Topo Chico so carbonated? And last, I don't know if you still do this, but I'm 27, male, and my wife is supportive of my cooking shenanigans. Well, Daniel, I'll give you this little piece of advice before all of our power cuts out and we're forced to go. One of your problems with getting a high level of carbonation is that when you remove the water from the bottle and do your double carbonation, which I always recommend you do two carbonations and make sure you squeeze all of the air out in between if you really want the full amount of carbonation. One of the problems is actually doing the carbonation is raising the temperature of the water while you're doing it, as opposed to the way they do it in commercial situations, which is they carbonate it at room temperature and then chill it afterwards at a very high pressure. What I would do is take one or two ice cubes and put them onto the rim of your bottle and then smack it with your palm to smash the ice cube into the bottle so you actually have a couple of nuggets of ice in there. Make sure it is ice cold, and then those two little or three little nuggets of ice will keep the temperature of the water extremely low while you're carbonating and allow you to get that really, really bubbly result you want at 42 to 45 PSI. So I hope that's been helpful. If you're caught in this storm, stay safe. I'm going to check on Stas and see how she's doing with the power. Anything else, guys? Thanks, Phil Bravo. You got anything else to say on the way out, people?
Just the realization that the Vita Prep is your didgeridoo, Dave.
I wish someone paid me to use it, so I'm not quite a professional. I haven't made it to the Pat Posey level of Vitamix instrumentation, but like I would say, I am a mid-level ocarinist of the Vita Prep.
Love it. I'm gonna make some pudding.
Cool. Cooking issues.
Cooking issues is powered by Simplecast.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.
Hi, listeners. We want to tell you about a podcast we're really digging. It's called Christopher Kimball's Milk Street Radio. Every week, they travel the world to find the most fascinating stories about food, including children who harvest cod tongues after school in Norway, and a detective who tracks down food thieves. And on Milk Street Radio, you can always find the unexpected. The comedian who ranks apples using an elaborate 100-point system, the secret history of grocery stores, and how to eat your way through Italy. They also interview the most beloved names in food like Jacques Pepin, Sola Alweli, Jose Andres, Jet Tila, Ina Garten, Nigella Lawson, and Padma Lakshmi. Plus, co-hosts Christopher Kimball and Sarah Moulton do live calls with listeners and answer their questions about ingredients, techniques, and culinary mysteries. Like, why roasting a leg of lamb made one caller's oven explode? Ever wonder why your bread won't rise or your souffle falls flat? Chris and Sarah have the answers. You'll also hear from a rotating cast of contributors, including Kenji Lopez-Alt, Cheryl Day, Dan Pashman from The Sporkful, and Alex Inouz, a French guy cooking from YouTube. Take a listen at 177milkstreet.com/radio or just search your podcast app for Milk Street Radio.